Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to Season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And Julie, I don't have the best memory in the world. Maybe it's an average memory. I'm not saying I have problems with my brain or anything, but I often forget that. I think everybody has this, where the really boring stuff you need to remember sometimes, you don't remember. I can have a simple list to go to the grocery with, and if I don't have it written like in the notes section of my iPhone, then I'm not going to remember everything, even if it's something vital, like the thing that I need to eat that night, an important component in the meal, I still will forget to pick it up.
I'm sorry, what were you just saying?
No, that's just...
You know I have a horrible memory. I read something in our research that compared memory to a Wikipedia entry.
Really?
Yeah, and they were saying it's your memory is constantly being altered and augmented and then sometimes pared away.
Yeah, and sometimes the stuff that it's being updated with is completely not true.
It's horse manure sometimes, turns out.
Yeah.
And that's not necessarily what we're going to talk about today, but you had actually talked to me about that before and I thought it was fascinating. Weren't you saying that when you have a memory, each time you bring it up, you're revising it in some way?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We'll definitely have to cover that in an upcoming episode in more detail. But yeah, every time you bring up a memory, you're not just removing it pristine from the vault and then returning it pristine to the vault, but you're updating it each time because your brain needs updated information.
Right.
Because we live in a world, as we discussed in our math podcast, we live in a world and have to navigate a world of multiple movable objects and symbols. So we have to be able to fly with that.
Yep, and then hence the horse manure sometimes, right?
Right.
Right.
So people have had horrible memories for as long as we've had to remember things because just as math, as we discussed in the math podcast, we develop mathematics to do the things that we're not naturally inclined to be able to do with our normal mental faculties.
Right.
We have to develop systems.
But what to do if you're in the Roman Empire, for instance, just hanging out? And you don't necessarily have a ton of books around you or your iPhone there.
Yep. Well, in this case, you turn to something called the Memory Palace, also known as the Method of Loki, right?
That's right.
Yep. And the origins of this go back to a back to the 5th century BC, and a Greek poet by the name of Simonides of Ceos. And he was attending a party, you know, in the dining hall, having fun, around a table with a bunch of buddies, and he walked out for a few minutes, and the whole entire place collapsed behind him.
Oh, he walked out. I wondered how he survived. Okay.
Yeah, I maybe went out for smoke or something. I don't know.
Sure, yeah.
But he went outside, and everything collapsed. He survives. Everybody else is just crushed to just mush, just a smucker's jam.
Yeah.
There's no identifying these people. But he was
smucker's jam.
With a name like Smuckers. So he goes back in. Oh, he doesn't go back in, but they dig everything up. Again, Smucker's jam everywhere. And they're like, all right, who were each of these people? And he says, well, let me think about it. And he's able to identify each puddle
Grape Concord.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah,
so-and-so.
He's able to identify them based on their seating position at the table.
Mm-hmm.
He's able to remember where they were spatially.
Okay.
And therefore remember who they were and identify these remains.
And this was a big moment for him, right?
Yeah, because then he realized, hey, I could apply this to other things in my life. If I have a list I need to remember, if there's a long list of facts I need to get down, this is how I could do it. And so this survived for ages, for centuries and centuries and on up through today.
Mm-hmm.
One big proponent of this was Dominican monk Giordano Bruno, who he was burned at the stake in 1600 for heresy. But it wasn't the memory palace method that that got him there, though I think some people found it kind of creepy. But his whole thing had to do with he believed that God was present in nature and that the universe and life was infinite, therefore that, you know, there might be aliens or something. And so
that got him into the hot water.
Yeah, the Roman Catholic Church wasn't big on that at the time. Though today they have a statue where he was burned, and he's more revered these days.
No, that's nice. Yeah. You know, at least later on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea here, if you want to look at like just sort of a simple version, is you take these mundane facts.
Mm-hmm.
And you position them in a spatial framework.
Okay.
And you make,
I'm with you.
And you make them interesting.
All right. So the idea of the memory palace is to create a mental house.
Right.
In which to house and organize symbolic images,
mm-hmm.
which then could serve as a cue for information retrieval, right?
Right. Like, for instance, our good friend, Simonides, here could easily populate this banquet table with, a list of addresses he needs to remember. If he can come up with a unique way to remember each one and then remember them in order based on where they are at the table.
Okay. And just a little side fact to Thomas Harris's novel, Hannibal. Actually, Hannibal Lecter uses memory palaces for his patients' records.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he does.
I've forgotten about that. I read that ages ago.
Yeah, and even includes music, too, for the rooms that he's going into.
Oh, wow. Well, hey, if it's good enough for Hannibal Lecter... You know, it's good enough for me, which is why I actually tried this out yesterday.
Okay.
And I'm going to repeat everything that I imagined, the way I built and populated my memory palace so that I could remember a list of 5 things to get from the grocery store on the way home.
Okay. You didn't write a thing down.
No, did not write a thing down. I didn't put anything in my phone. And so these were the things. It was soy creamer, Engelhofer's mustard, ant traps, frozen fruit, and toilet paper. So, just a standard run for me.
All right. What does your memory palace look like?
Okay.
Walk us through it.
So I decided to, for the space, I decided to use the space that I'm occupying right now, the How Stuff Works podcast room / podcast chamber.
Okay.
Okay. So this is the way I pictured it. All right. Over here behind you is our sound booth.
Mm-hmm.
And inside it, I pictured a robot cow drinking coffee. For my soy milk.
Okay.
All right. And then seated where you are, you're not here, but instead there's a large German man in a lederhosen,
mm-hmm.
With big mustache going on, mm-hmm. and he's got big clumps of spicy hot mustard in his mustache.
Mm.
And that's the Engelhofer's mustache because it has a little German man on the label.
Yeah.
Then in this seat between us, because the table that we record at has a third chair that is never occupied by an actual person, but in my memory palace, it is occupied by a large pile like a human-sized pile of frozen fruit, and it's just gleaming in the light, melting a little bit, smelling sweet, and you know, I can see strawberry and mango and all, and because this is an important part of the Memory Palace, to add some details to it, you know? You're not just thinking the word, frozen fruit, you're picturing it.
Right.
It is existing in space and not just a concept.
Okay.
All right, and then if I were to poke my head out through these curtains where Jerry is sitting, our producer, I would see a giant ant. And that ant is dressed in Maria Von Trapp's dress from The Sound of Music, because I need to remember ant traps.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the fifth item, standing at the green screen behind Jerry's seat, there is a toilet paper mummy going through a number of sexy poses for the camera.
They're sexy poses?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, it worked. I was able to remember... I know, only five things. It's kind of puny. But I was able to remember these five things. Now, you can also say that, well, I was doing this for the podcast. I was applying more thought to this than I would normally apply to the list that of things I need to pick up. And it's also worth noting that even though this is an abbreviated version, one can use, people use this for hundreds of items.
Right. And in fact, in each room, you could have, I don't know, 5-10 different items that are living there. It's just a matter of placing the object, right?
Yeah. Well, how about you? Do you have a memory palace you've constructed for
us? I do. And I'm not going to actually share it. Because I don't think it's I'll share one on my, on my list. And basically, I need to mail my FSA reimbursement, right?
Okay.
Flexible spending account. So at my front door, I just pictured angry cherubs with wings made out of dollar bills greeting me at the front door with a pile of mail.
Oh, well, that's good.
Right. Like, you know, and they're angry because they're like, if you don't send this stuff in, my wings are going to fall off or whatever. I don't know. But I do have other rooms. But just for brevity's sake, I won't tell. But what I love about this is that it quickly becomes very similar to the surrealism that, I don't know about you, but for me, that I experience in my dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like all of a sudden there's these incongruent things going on and they're wild and they're fantastic. And that's, I think, why we remember our dreams sometimes, right? Because they're so extraordinary.
Yeah, we were.
To us, at least.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we were talking about this, how we take something mundane and we turn it into something crazy and memorable. In the same way that on, this trip from New York. We both just came back from attending the World Science Festival in New York City.
Woot woot, by the way.
Yeah, 2011. It's going to be back in 2012. Highly recommend anybody who's big into science and lives in New York to give it a go. And then that's actually where I attended I was in the audience for a panel on memory, and that's where I got really excited about the concept of the Memory Palace. But while I was waiting to go into one of these events, my wife and I were waiting out in this little courtyard area, and we saw this man walk up with a box, a cardboard box under his arm that said trout on the side. Like, I don't know, like a beer cart, like a box that like beer would come in or something.
Right.
But it just said trout. I don't know what the brand was. But anyway, he's standing there, puts his box down on the ground, and he gets a handful of bread or crackers out, and he starts feeding the pigeons. Which I don't think is technically illegal, but he's doing it anyway. So he's feeding the pigeons. Three of them land there, and they're just standing there eating. And then slowly he starts raising his hand up, moving his hand forward. And then he reaches down, snatches one of the pigeons, stuffs it into the cardboard box, and then walks off with the cardboard box full of a pigeon.
And so you told me that, and I don't think I'll ever be able to look at a pigeon without thinking of that poor pigeon's fate.
Yeah.
Or wondering, again, why the side of the cooler said trout.
Yeah. Yeah. So that it's, yeah, I have no idea what he was doing with it, what the purpose was, if he was an official pigeon catcher, if he was going to eat it for dinner, you know, who knows. But it was memorable because it was so weird.
Yeah.
And so the Memory Palace is kind of like, let's make the mundane fact, let's make the soy creamer that I will inevitably forget, let's make that into something memorable so that I can't forget it, at least for a short term.
Right, right.
And then... You can use this Memory Palace, and you can populate it with hundreds of items. So it's, you can remember a list in order of hundreds of items.
And that's what mental athletes do. They're called mental athletes,
yeah.
And we'll get to them in a bit.
Yeah, after this quick break.
Yeah.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
And we're back. Do you remember what we were talking about, everyone? Memory Palace.
Something about robotic cows.
No, yeah, well, that that was part of it. That was how we remembered the soy kernel.
Yeah, well, let's just walk through this really quickly, just like sort of four easy steps on how you can create your own memory palace.
Okay.
So we've already talked about it, the first step, which is create a physical location that you can clearly visualize.
This, right. You need to, and that's why I went with the podcast chamber for me, because I see it all the time. I'm very familiar with the locations, and I can imagine it instantly.
Right. And you can make up your own palace, you know, just as long as you can get a clear beat on the detail of it.
Like, might I recommend, like, maybe the command deck from one of the Star Trek shows? That would be a good
place. There you go. That's a good example. And step two is to establish a memory route through the location.
Right.
So if you're going to use, say, your childhood home, then you want to go through the front door and, you know, pick a route that, say, you go left to the kitchen and then down the hallway or so on and so forth. You want to keep that same route all the time. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, Joshua Foer, who wrote a book about all this called Moonwalking with Einstein, he actually did a short video for the World Science Festival, and it was shown during this memory panel that I attended, and he actually did it in a garden, it was more like a garden area of a park or something, mm-hmm. and he's like, all right. Here is going to be, and it was something crazy, like, you know, Einstein moonwalking, that's the title.
Yeah.
And then he walked through it, and he was able to do like a list of 110 things.
Yeah, and as he's walking through it, he's placing the objects. So this is really important.
Yeah.
So once you establish your route, you want to put your objects that you want to remember, your things or your concepts that you want to remember in that room. And the reason why you want to do this is because it becomes what's called a memory peg. Okay, so that's important for step three, is you need to now peg the memory to the object. So that's when you start to think about these really bizarre associations, right? The more bizarre, the better.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to remember to pick up bananas, then you can visualize your front door as a banana daiquiri portal with Carmen Miranda greeting you or something along those lines.
It helps if you're kind of silly, I think.
Silliness, yeah. Definitely, yeah. And you can add a song or a scent to the memory, especially if you're Hannibal Lecter, right? And then step four is just to repeat the visualization until you've cemented the objects to the memories. You've really pegged those memories.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a fairly simple process. So we should probably talk about the research part of this, which is pretty cool, and actually talk about these mental athletes.
So there are many types of memory. We don't just have memory in the human brain. We have, just to give you a brief idea, we have sensory memory. We have short-term, long-term, explicit, implicit, procedural, declarative, episodic, semantic. And we also have spatial memory. And the spatial context is extremely important. Like it, because again, at a very basic level, we are navigating a world, a physical world of movable, numerous, objects and symbols.
That's right. And I've talked about this before, that when you walk into a room, that 99% of what you're perceiving isn't necessarily coming through your eyes. It's coming from the associations that your brain is making spatially.
Right.
So whether or not you realize it, you're judging the height of the ceiling or the doors and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, if you look back in our evolutionary history, you know, there's a time where you need to remember the field where you killed a monkey that you're going to eat or something mm-hmm. of that nature. You know, where does it lay in the field? Has it moved? So we end up having this spatial scaffolding upon which we make sense of our entire lives. Just think of a calendar or think of a timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Like these are spatial scaffolding systems that we use to understand what's going on in the world around us.
Yeah, and I especially like the evolutionary example, because why you would need the spatial memory is because, mm-hmm. yeah, again, think about like trying to find food sources and mapping that out in your brain.
Yeah.
Or trying to figure out where that den of lions are.
Yeah.
And how best to avoid them.
Yeah, so it's really important to stress here that the memory palace is not a trick. It's not really a trick.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something, and when you have people who can use it and use it to impressive degrees, not just for five items at the grocery store, that they're not doing anything out of the ordinary. Like the spatial way, and the way that we use spatial memory in the memory palace is just how we think. It's how the brain works.
Well, and also these mental athletes that compete, right? Mm-hmm. They actually have very average memories. They've tested them.
Yeah, these are not. Yeah, super powered brains here. These are normal brains. They're using just to tie down what's happening in the brain. And there's a lot going on in the brain with memory, but spatial memory is tied to the hippocampus, which is located in the temporal lobe, and it kind of looks like a long gummy worm kind of thing. in your brain. And it's also worth noting that at the head of this worm, you have the amygdala, which is tied to emotional memory, which, again, kind of looks like the head of the worm. And underneath that, you have the parahippocampal, which is tied into details, memory recoding, and memory retrieval. Mm-hmm. But the hippocampus, that's spatial, and that's the area that really fires up when these mental athletes start using the memory palace to exceptional degrees.
That's right. In a study of 8 top-ranking mental athletes, they were asked to memorize 3-digit numbers, black and white photographs of people's faces, and magnified images of snowflakes. Researchers found that in comparison to the control group of non-mental athletes, the mental athletes were using a lot more of their spatial memory in that hippocampus region that you talked about. And again, it's because they're using that spatial reasoning to peg a blueprint of all the objects that they're memorizing.
Yeah.
So we're talking about these mental athletes. Let's talk specifically about one of the more famous ones, I suppose, by now, Joshua Foer.
Yeah, this is the guy who wrote Moonwalking with Einstein that I mentioned earlier. He became interested in these individuals. And
he's just a journalist, right?
Yeah, just a journalist.
Like, I want to find out more about this.
Yeah. I mean, he became interested in the U.S. Memory Championship, and he went there expecting to interview a bunch of savants and just, you know, mental giants.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of laughed at the notion when he asked them the questions, because they were like, no, I'm just, you know, a normal dude, and this is not that complicated. And so he kind of took it on as a challenge to like, well, let me see what I can do. Let me try out the memory palace. Let me see what I can do with the method of Loki.
Yeah. And he spent a whole year, this was just pretty incredible, with memory champ Ed Cook, literally just so he could improve his mental acuity, right?
Yeah.
That was the first thing that he wanted to try to do. But he became really obsessed with becoming a mental athlete himself. And he went on to compete in and win the U.S. Memory Championship.
Yeah.
And each morning during this year, he would spend 15 minutes memorizing a new poem or memorizing the names in an old yearbook, for instance. But that's not where it stopped. I mean, he was obsessed with this. So on the subway, he would start to memorize random numbers, or he would keep a deck of playing cards with him and memorize those. And he began to catalog everything in his existence and constructing, like, basically like condominiums of mental palaces,
yeah,
so to speak.
Cook, the guy that he interviewed,
mm-hmm.
He actually did a TED talk or a TEDx talk or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll have to embed that in the blog post that we do to accompany this particular episode, because he goes into how he uses the memory palace system. He's memorized things like Chinese characters.
Yeah.
You know, basically learning bits of another language via the memory palace.
Yeah, and he has some really good visual representations in that video.
Really silly ones.
Yeah, super silly. Joshua Foer, yeah, completely obsessed. He even bought a pair of goggles and spray painted them black, and then he cut out eye holes in them. And this is all in an effort so that he could better concentrate on his memory skills.
Yeah. So it looks like that part of it sounds like, you know, Jedi master training where you're like wearing some sort of, you know, Far Eastern like thing. But then in his mind, he's thinking about goofy things like, Katharine Hepburn juggling frogs or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a great New York Times article, called Secrets of a Mind Gamer. And in it, Cook says to the reporter there that photographic memory, because the reporter brings up, well, isn't this just photographic memory?
Yeah. And no, not at all.
Yeah. And he says, no, photographic memory is a despicable myth. It doesn't exist. In fact, my memory is quite average. All of us here have quite average memories. Okay. So this is coming from the guy who could recite most of Paradise Lost by heart, as well as like 252 random digits he could commit to memory in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these really are incredible feats that these guys are doing.
Yeah. Indeed.
And actually, you know, this is a competition that they have among themselves, but Cook says that it's also an attempt for them to rescue a long lost tradition of memory training. Because again, we don't necessarily need it these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except that we still have these crazy failing memories, right?
Yeah.
Just for the most mundane things. Like I mentioned to you that, I think a lot for some reason about Quentin Tarantino movies, but inevitably I always forget his name. And yet it's something that, you know, I reference a lot.
Well, how are you going to remember it? How would you use the memory palace to remember
his
name?
Okay, the reason why I can even say Quentin Tarantino now is because now I think about going to San Quentin and going to the commissary. And in the commissary, Mario Batali is fixing 10,000 plates of Tarantino pasta.
Well, see, Well, see, and that makes perfect sense within the architecture of your mind. But I would have to use Quentin Tarantino to remember that other stuff you were talking about. I mean, Sam Quentin, I know. But who is the guy?
Mario Batali?
Who's that?
Oh, man, he's this great Italian chef. And okay. And you don't have to...
Oh, is he the redheaded dude?
Yeah. Okay. He's pretty outrageous in and of himself. You don't really have to do much to him. Like, you know, you don't want to gild the lily there.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, I mean, this is stuff that you can do. But it's pretty amazing to look at this Joshua Foer character and Ed Cook and see them in action. And in that video that Ed Cook has on the TEDx, he says that you should use your memory in a playful and enjoyable way, and you should experience it as a gift rather than a boring and annoying thing you'd rather park away in your iPhone.
Yeah, because that's the thing. They're enjoying these memory games. And I have to say, learning that little list was kind of fun. So... The five things I had to remember at the grocery store. But I don't know, maybe I should play with it more and see how it goes. And I certainly encourage anyone listening to give the Memory Palace a go, to try using it. Even if it's just like, you know, the next time you need to do a grocery list of just a few items.
Yeah.
Don't write it down. Don't put it in your cell phone. Try constructing a memory palace out of it. And I think you'll be surprised at how well it works.
Yeah, and I would love to hear too if you have any other mnemonic devices that you use.
Yeah, because I think we've all, like, I used like poems at one point, like when I was in junior high. In fact, I believe I got kicked out of AP History for writing a raunchy poem to memorize something about the original 13 colonies.
Robert Lamb.
Yeah,
I love it. What a tawdry past.
I know, it was quite the scandal at the time. But yeah, if you have any other weird methods or you know, that you employ to sort of tweak your brain into doing things it wouldn't normally do, like remembering senseless data, let us know.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, hey, I have some listener mail here. Let me get out the bag here and see what we have. Ah, here we go. Here's a good one. This was from Katie, and Katie's responding to our Cyber Immortality podcast. That we did about a month back. She says, "Hey guys, love the podcast. Sorry this response is a little delayed to the podcast date." And by all means, don't ever worry about that, sending us mail. We'd love to hear about you know, anything you have to say about past or current
time topics. Is relative.
Yeah. She says, "But I don't get them every week, and I have to listen to them in blocks, as you will. I was listening to the podcast on cyber immortality and heard the comments of the 30-year-old about the 30-year-old self meeting another 30-year-old self and the idea of living on by downloading your consciousness into a robot. I was just wondering if either of you guys had heard of a television series called Dollhouse that aired a couple of years ago. It was on for 2 seasons and was a Joss Whedon creation. If not, you can Netflix it on instant streaming. In that series, a group of people voluntarily sign their bodies away for 5 years for neurological experiments. The Dollhouse is a place where they download your consciousness onto a hard disk and stick it in the self shelf. They then use that person's body as an empty shell called dolls, where they imprint or download personalities into these bodies and send them out on engagements, missions, that range from prostitution to bank robbery to surrogate mommies, etc. Then, as the series progresses, the powers that be in the corporation get greedy and decided to start giving away the bodies downloaded with a paying customer's consciousness to be the now dead customer's new body. So it, you know, becomes a kind of immortality. And, of course, all sorts of chaotic things ensued on the civilized life, security, and personal liberties. I thought you guys might want to check it out since it follows that awfulized chain of thought as to what could happen. All of these things start out as noble little steps for the betterment of man, but become monstrous terrors in and of himself. Thanks for the podcast.
All right. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. Well, I've actually seen all the episodes. Actually.
You have? Gosh.
I should have mentioned in that episode, I guess, because even though I think a lot of people was less than satisfied with the show as it actually came mm-hmm. together, it was they tried to do some interesting things. They really did tackle a lot of these ideas that arise from cyber immortality.
Right.
You know, what if you could store human's mind, human's identity on a disc? What if you could switch them around?
Mm-hmm.
You know, could we live forever? What would happen to personal freedoms? So it does explore a lot of those ideas and does get your brain going. But I wasn't completely pleased with it.
Hmm.
But yeah, check
you
it out
that
though
reading?
If you're into it. Yeah, the Whedon's great. I love Firefly.
Yeah. You just had high standards, that's all. Yeah. What you gonna do?
Well, hey, if you guys have anything to share with us, if there are any bits of science fiction or pop culture that tie into something we've talked about that we haven't mentioned or are not aware of, let us know, because we'd love to hear about them. And you can find us on both Facebook and Twitter as Blow the Mind, and those are great ways to interact with us.
And you can also email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.